Hello, beloved community. Welcome to this episode of Out on the Edge, recorded December 28th, 2025. We co-hosts, Judy McCord, Robin Hamilton, and Betty Priu, are honored to have folks join us to discuss topics relevant to being gay and gray in these very interesting times. Our guest today is Janet Sarah Chandler, a poet whose first book, Poetry and Prose from a Transgender Soul, was published in April of 2025. The show is brought to you by the Orange County, North Carolina Department on Aging. We broadcast every Monday afternoon, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern, over WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, Carborough, at 103.5 FM, and we also stream over WCOMFM.org. You can find previous shows on the Orange County, North Carolina Department on Aging website at www.orangecountync.gov/OOTE. The Department on Aging website also explains the wide range of elder and caregiver resources available in our county. We acknowledge that the town of Carborough and the surrounding land was originally part of the Saponi People's Territory, including the Eno, Tutelo, and Shikori Nations. To return to today's show, we are delighted to talk with Janet Sarah Chandler, who describes herself as a semi-retired cashier and full-time writer of poetry. Her first book, Poetry and Prose from a Transgender Soul, was published in April 2025. Jan is currently working on a new book of poetry, as well as a book about famous trans people in history. So, Robin, over to you to start our conversation with Janet.
Hi, Janet. Again, let me welcome you to our show. You and I have known each other online for a couple of years. We've shared poetry back and forth, and I thought it would be wonderful for you to come and talk to us, tell us some of your background, some of your story, and how the poetry has grown out of the transition or started the transition. You transitioned a number of years ago, so why don't you go back and give us what you are comfortable with giving us about your history and your transition?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me to come on here and talk about myself and help promote my book. I really appreciate it. And it's funny when we're doing this because in 4 days, it's going to be the 24th anniversary of when I started my transitioning on January 1st, 2002. When wow. I took my first estradiol and all the other hormones that I'm taking now. So it's funny we're doing this when it's only 4 days away from my anniversary. My story in many cases is pretty much similar. I was around 5 years old, I guess, when I was first conscious of something different about me, because I can remember as a kid, if my parents were going to go out for dinner or something, and watching my mother getting dressed and ready to go out and watching her pick out a dress to wear and then putting on her makeup and that. And I have always think to myself, I'd like to do that. Why can't I do that? And I think that was beginning for me of not knowing what it was that I was feeling, but I was feeling that I'm supposed to be a boy because everybody tells me I'm a boy. They treat me like a boy, but I have these feelings that I should be a girl. But I was too scared to say anything because I was afraid my parents would be mad at me. And in all honesty, I thought, am I the only boy who thinks this way? Is there something wrong with me?
When were you about that age?
Five.
I mean, but at what time? 19 something, right?
Oh, well, yeah. We're talking 1961 when I was 5 years old.
Okay.
And so, you know, back in 1961, practically nobody knew anything about trans people.
Mm-hmm.
Probably with one exception being Christine Jorgensen, became famous in 53 when the press got hold how she went to Europe to start the series of operations to go through her gender change. And by the time she got back to the United States, the press knew about it, and they were all waiting at, I think it was LaGuardia Airport, where she landed, and wanting to talk with her and interview her. That's about the only thing that a lot of people really knew about trans people, and she was just kind of like this curiosity, because nobody had heard about it.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, a lot of people, including myself for the longest time, mistakenly always believed she was the first one to have gender reassignment surgery.
Yeah.
But she was far, far, far from having been the first one to ever done it. In fact, in doing my research for the book I'm doing on famous trans people. The very first gender reassignment surgery was done back in 1906 in Germany with a female to male who had been born intersex, and the doctor just went ahead and pronounced her a girl, and that's
Gosh.
how her parents raised her, but she never identified that way. And it wasn't until she went to college that she started to explore herself and her situation. So in 61, I didn't even know about Christine Jorgensen. I was probably around 14 or so when I first heard about that. And I'm going, wait a minute, there's somebody else who had
Right.
these kind of
What part of the country
feelings?
were you in?
Pardon?
What part of the country were you in?
Down south here in Florida. Yeah.
I was in Mississippi. I went through the same thing a year or two behind or in front of you. So, yeah.
Yeah. So not knowing that there were others out there dealing with this, and and it's 1961. It's not like you could go on the computer and Google, because Google didn't exist,
Right.
because hey, the internet didn't exist, because hey, home computers didn't exist at that time. The only people that had computers were the scientists in the laboratories, and there was no access to any kind of information to try and help somebody who was dealing with these kind of feelings to understand themselves and know what to do or how they can get help in dealing with this. So what I ended up doing is I internalized everything. I just kept it to myself. I was scared to death that anybody would find out about me. I said I was scared for my parents. I thought, well, they wouldn't love me anymore. They would desert me. They would just get rid of me of that, because again, I was constantly told I'm a boy. I was dressed up like a boy. I had my hair cut like a boy, and I'm expected to be a boy. Problem was, I was terrible at being a boy, and as a result, I had my share of bullying. It wasn't bad, but I still had my share of bullying when I was in school, and it just made me all the more internalize everything on myself and just keep it hidden away. I had some friends and that, but I always kept even my friends at a distance, because I was always afraid of what they would think or what they would do if they ever found my secret. That was just, it prevented me from doing a lot of things in life, because I was always scared of being found out. And I punished myself, not in the physical sense, but mentally, I punished myself a lot because of what I was feeling.
It's our stories are very similar, and the lack of access to information, the lack of community, the lack of ability to break out of feeling incredibly isolated and alone and not having any idea what we're doing. I stuffed it down so far I wasn't even aware of it anymore. I was like, oh, not me, I can't deal with that anything. And then when I became a young adult, that is when I first started exploring the information that was out there, and what it took and everything like that. At what point did you start looking at like science information? When did the body of information that was around in the 70s become accessible to you? I'd already finished college before I actually started exploring that sort of thing. So where were you started gathering the information?
Growing up in that era where we didn't have the internet, what I was finding here and there along the way, I'd get little bits of information about it through an occasional magazine article I might see, where, like, for example, with Jan Morris, when she wrote her book Conundrum, there was an article, I think it was in Newsweek magazine. It was the first time I heard of her, and reading a bit about her story in the article. Just bits and pieces here and there, newspaper articles that would sometimes have some kind of a story involving a trans person. And even good old Ann Landers, every once in a great while in her article, in her a column rather, she would have somebody say, well, I have these desires. I think I should be a girl, or I should be a boy, or whatever.
I'd like to
And
dress up in my wife's clothes. Lots of those letters.
yes.
People may not know listening to us talk. I mean, these are like advice columnists, right? Ann Landers, that ran in newspapers all across the US. And she was a very trusted advice columnist.
Yeah.
What kind of responses did you see her give to people? I mean, who had questions like that, Janet?
The thing with, and might I also add, her sister, Abby, dear Abby, they were sisters, and she was the same way as far as when it came to cross dressers and transgendered individuals, and that they were always very positive and very supportive about, and saying that there was nothing wrong with this. It was part of who we were as a person. And that certainly was, for me, a help to see this kind of positivity that they were spreading out to everybody who was reading their columns. They were very, very, both of them. I read Ann Landers more because the local newspaper we were getting at the time, they carried her column and not Dear Abby's. But I occasionally would see a newspaper where Dear Abby was in it, and she was the same way with how she was supportive with, again, cross-dressers in the trans community, and even with gays and lesbians, as far as that goes too.
And that
They were
was what?
very both pro-LGBTQ at that time.
Wow, 60s, 70s. 80s, right? I mean, that's like incredibly progressive when you think about it. Wow.
And I'll give another shout out too to somebody else that helped me a lot, and that was Phil Donahue when he had his talk show. And every once in a while, he would have a show on dealing with the subject of trans. Well, back then, of course, the term was transsexuals. They weren't using transgender at that point. But having them on the show and talking about their lives and actually seeing these people, seeing that they're real people sitting up there on the stage and talking on the television about their situation, it was a help for me to at least come to some acceptance that I'm not alone. There are others more than I would anticipated out there that were like me. I still was dealing, though, trying to suppress my feelings, still afraid of people finding out about me. But it did give me some hope, I guess, that, and encouragement that, like I said, I wasn't alone, that there were people out there not just talking about their stories, but to have people like Phil Donahue, just as in the case with Dear Abby and Ann Landers, who were supportive and showing us in a positive light and giving us the chance to talk about the experiences, well, not mine, because I was in the closet still, but their experiences dealing with this and how they grew up with it and what they went through with transitioning and what they faced with families, with their job, with just the world in general.
Right. And just, I'm just thinking for folks who don't know, Phil Donahue was one of the early, really popular talk show hosts on American television. Again, another thing that went in when we had only three major networks and everybody got broadcast TV and that was it. Everyone saw people like that. So them to be that accepting and that supportive, you know, was a really powerful thing. I think probably helped change people's ideas more than we know.
There were three networks plus public television, and that's what everybody watched. So you always would know the next day, in school, we'd come in and say, "So what about the man from Uncle last night?" Or, "What did you like the Munsters?" Or, and everybody was talking about the guests that were on Phil Donahue and the guests that were on these shows and things like that. I remember the audiences in these shows were like, "Wow, that's really fascinating. Oh, that must have been so hard." The audiences, as a rule, taking their cue from Donahue and Merv Griffin and Sally Jesse Raphael and all of that genre, they were supportive, they were curious, they were non-judgmental, and so that's what the audiences were. Then some of the hosts decided they wanted to spice up their ratings, and so they spun it so it became far more confrontational. Dr. Phil, Dr. Oz, I mean, people whose names we should not have. Anyway,
Barry Springer, he
Jerry
was the worst
Springer.
of them all.
Well, and they were just, we don't need to review that, but it was a very,
Yeah.
the shift in the presentation of trans people on TV over time. And I don't know, Janet, if you have any idea or anything like that, but it leads to the next thing I wanted us to talk about was You and I grew up very similarly in a very similar time with this is a general landscape of what was going on. That's very different from the landscape in 2025. I don't want to jump to that right now, but you have a very specific event that you and I have talked about where you realized you were trans or you acknowledged you were trans and you came out. So I want us to move up to that. And to button onto that, I wanted to talk about how it was easier for you then than it might be for somebody now, or is it easier now than it was for you then? So continue, please, with your journey.
Okay. Well, so like I said, most of my information was just bits and pieces here where I was getting it from either newspaper or magazines or TV. As I grew older and I still was suppressing everything, I mean, I really tried hard. But it finally reached a point where it was getting harder and harder for me to try and suppress it. Even though I was, it was just getting harder and harder. I tried leading up to the moment when I finally made that decision, and it was through the help of a friend who knew my situation and gave me, I think, really a gentle push towards resolving myself. I tried to make myself feel that, look, I don't really want to transition. I don't really want to be a woman. I tried to tell myself, and I talked about this with my friend Lulu when I did her show, that I was just a cross-dresser. That's all I am. I'm just a cross-dresser, and that's as far as it goes. And so to that degree, I joined a local Trieste society. Trieste is the Society for the Second Self, which is for male cross-dressers, where they can meet every month and they can dress and socialize, and they have support groups for the wives and girlfriends where they can learn how to deal with their partner or their husband's dressing up. And I figured, well, this will just help settle into just accepting that I'm just a cross-dresser.
Right.
Well, the president of the local chapter and I were talking, and I confided how I'd been battling with the idea that I was trans. And it turns out there's a few in the Trieste society that really are dealing with that as well. They just figure Trieste will just help them suppress that. And she was going through a period where she thought maybe she was trans. And she would go every year, every September in Atlanta, Georgia. They used to have what they called the Southern Comfort Conference. And it was a nationwide deal where transgendered people, genderqueer people, non-binary people from all over the country would come every September to Atlanta, Georgia for a week to get together, and there would be all kinds of meetings and seminars and classes to help you with learning how to do makeup or learning about women's fashion, everything to just promote being confident in yourself and believe in yourself and accept yourself for who you are. And my friend told me many times about it, and she'd always say, "You should go sometime. I think you would really enjoy it. I think you would get a lot from it." So in 2001, it was coming up, the Southern Comfort Conference, and they were starting to put out anybody, who wants to come, make your reservations now, get your hotel room set up. And my friend called me and said, "Look, want to go? I mean, they're advertising. They're taking reservations now." And we talked a bit about it, and I thought about it for a bit, and then I said, "You know what? Let's do it. You talk so much about this. I want to go. I want to see this. I want to see what it's like." So we get the reservations made. We get everything all set up, and I decide that, I'm going to be spending the whole week dressing and presenting as a female. And I took it to the extreme. I was going to take advantage of this because I'd never had this situation being dressed for so long in femme. And I mean, my friend came to pick me up. He was in boy mode. I'm all dressed up. I'm ready to go. We go up there. And it was one of the best weeks in my life. I got to meet so many people, not just around the United States, but there are a few from other countries that would come in to attend the conference too. I got to meet so many different people, hear their stories. Some of them were cross-dressers, some of them were trans, some of them were hadn't transitioned yet, some of them had and had been living for many years. It was also really my first chance to learn about non-binary. I'd never really heard that term before, but I got a chance to meet a few non-binary people there and hear their story. And it was an education for me that allowed me to, after years of suppressing everything and holding everything down, to let everything come out. And the whole event ends on a Saturday night with a big evening gala where you dress up to the nines. And I had gone to this little shop, which was very LGBTQ friendly. The owner, I was good friends with her. She always helped cross dressers and transgender people. I mean, she sold women's clothes and accessories and jewelry, things like that. And there were a couple of times where I worked out with her an agreement where she kept her shop open after hours for trans people and cross dressers to be able to come into her shop and try on clothes and try on the shoes. And
That sounds wonderful.
we had a blast. And she made money and extra money out of it, and they came away because she was very particular about what she would sell in her store. It was a consignment shop. She had strict standards, so you knew the clothes that she had on there were top quality. And she had this gorgeous white evening gown, and I said, "That's it. That's what I'm taking with me to Atlanta. That's going to be my dress for Saturday night for the big gala." And it was an evening to remember, and we just had a blast, and it was a fun time. And I've never felt as free with myself as I did during that week. So now it's Sunday morning after the Saturday night gala, and we're packing up now and we're getting ready to go home. And my friend and I, we were talking about things we'd done during the week, classes I went to, seminars she went to, and then at night too, I didn't mention that they would have all kinds of activities, go to local gay bars and lesbian bars and just have a good time. And we were talking, just reminiscing about what we did and what we saw. And as I'm folding up everything, I finally stopped and I looked at my said and I said, "F bomb this. I can't do this anymore. I'm not a cross dresser. I'm transgender. And I got to transition. I can't hide this anymore. I can't do this." And conveniently enough, she had a piece of paper with the name of a therapist and the phone number that she handed
Wow,
to me and said,
yeah.
so it always made me wonder that she kind of just knew it, but she just kind of gently nudged me so I found out on my own and that what who I was. And the next morning, Monday morning, after we got back from Atlanta, I called and made the appointment to see the therapist. And the next week, I went in for my first appointment.
Wow.
It's, I
And
like to say,
yeah.
I went to Southern Conference as a cross dresser and I left as transgender.
Oh, those people. God, you got groomed. Yes, yes.
Oh, yes.
I have to say, Janet, I was a speaker at Southern Comfort probably in the early 2000s, representing PFLAG. And
Oh,
I,
okay.
yeah, my husband was with me, and it was the first year of his transition as well.
Oh,
He
okay.
had just become my husband. So, he's got the same timeline as you in terms of when he began his transition. So we're
But I was a
celebrating
th this would have
25
been in my
years this year.
mid-40s. 44 was when this
He
all
was
started.
50. Yeah. So congratulations. That's a lovely story. And
Thank you.
I
Thank you.
definitely we're on a path, a parallel path here. Congratulations. That's fabulous.
I
Appreciate
have
that.
never been able, I've never done one of those. I am very jealous. Did you ever go back to Southern Comfort again, or was it just a one visit,
That
or
was just the one time
yeah,
that
that's all it took.
well, and plus when I made the decision, after going through the therapy and everything, and the doctor said to me, "Look, as far as I'm concerned, you're trans. So you got a choice. You can either go ahead with transitioning and I'll help get you set up with the doctor to start the hormone treatment, or if you want to keep fighting it, I will do everything I can to help you deal with continuing living the life you want to do." Well, I said, "No, I want to go ahead. I want to transition." Well, The moment I said that, that ended my membership with Tri-S because Tri-S is just for cross-dressers.
Right.
So I couldn't go to the meetings anymore. A friend who was still president for that chapter, we kept in contact, but we didn't really get to get together much anymore since I wasn't involved in Tri-S.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just that was just that one time that I went.
Okay. Well, were there other highlight? What were some of the highlights and lowlights of your transition? Losing, no longer being a member of Tri-S and your conversation with that person sort of falling off. But were there people's? How did this affect work or other social your social transition? What kind of impact did that have? I mean, you're still here. You're Janet, and it worked. But I'm just curious, what tips you might have for.
Well, being that I transitioned later in life, my parents never knew about my situation. I did live with my parents. They both came down almost at the same time with cancer. And so I ended up moving in with them and helping them get the doctor's appointments and help take care of around the house and everything. And my stepfather, my mother and father got divorced when I was like 16. He remarried, and my stepfather, he passed first in mid 90s, and that left just me and my mom. She passed away in 2000, and part of the reason too why I decided to transition, my mom never knew, like I said, about my situation, but I felt after my stepfather and my mom died, all my obligations of helping them and my duties and taking care of them were over. And it gave me the sad part is I lost my mom, but a net positive side, I guess, it gave me the chance to finally be kind of more open to myself because I didn't have the fear of holding me back and making me suppress how I felt. So that also, in the end, played a factor since I felt my obligations were made as as my mom's son to take care of her. That in going to Atlanta when I had the opportunity to Southern Comfort, it really just allowed me to release everything I was holding inside of me, all of the hatred even towards myself, because I couldn't be the person that I was expected to be. I mean, Lord knows I tried. But I never could be that person that you were expected to be as a man. And so it's mixed because yes, when my mom passed, I was last in my blood family. My real father had passed, my stepfather passed, all my uncles and aunts, they had passed. There are still cousins somewhere out there around roaming the country who I haven't seen since probably I was about 12. So there's no blood family that was left for me at that point. And it gave me a chance, I guess, to finally accept myself and just start doing for me instead of doing for others and trying to make other people happy. It was my turn to make myself happy and to pursue what I fought so damn hard to suppress.
Now that's there's a saying, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And I think that that is pretty much a way of describing at least the trans people that I have met. Is there's this everyone seems to have a sequence of events that lead inexorably to a point where it's like, oh, I'm trans. I can't be trans in my life now without, if they knew they were trans and they were in a closet, there's an inevitability to it in all the stories that we hear, that belies the, oh, it's a whim, it's a choice, put on clothes and and call yourself trans. And it's just, anyway, I think I have not spoken to anyone besides you who had the cathartic experience of, suddenly immersing yourself you went from the closet to Southern Comfort for good sake, and boom, like you said, the whole week, and you started, boom, you were just there. I can't imagine how wonderful that must have felt, and terrifying. So, and I think I'm just reestablishing what you have said is that the timing was right for you to do that. You could not have done it before,
Right.
and didn't need to do it later because you did it when you needed to do it. And that's congratulations.
How old were you then? What age were you at Southern Comfort?
See, I was 44 when I went to Southern Comfort.
Okay. God, what a powerful experience you described, really. Do you know if Southern Comfort still exists as a conference?
I know they're no longer in Atlanta.
So, Janet, is there anything you would like to add over the significance over the past 20, 24, 25 years since you came out to where you are now in your transition? Because I want to say I have plenty of time for your poetry,
Yes.
and that. So.
The biggest change over these last few years. So, like I said, I went to the therapist, we talked it over, took all the tests that needed, and after the sessions, I made the decision to transition. And at this point, it was November of 2001. And I went to see the doctor who would start me on my hormone therapy. And I went and I got the prescription. And at this point, it was mid-December 2001. And I remember I got home and opened up the bag with all of the hormones and that, getting ready to take them, and I stop because I go, you know what? It's mid-December. In another 2 weeks, it's going to be a new year. That's why I decided to wait, and I started my transitioning on January 1st, 2002, as a new year, a new life. So I started my transition officially then. I started coming out almost right away with neighbors and with my friends. Of course, there was no family for me to have to talk to, so that was one situation I didn't have to deal with, but unfortunately, many do have to. In January 2003, I started the process to get my name legally changed, and then I started looking at where I was going to go, who I was going to go have my surgery done by. And there were a lot of really good doctors out there all around the world that had high ratings, high praise for their work doing this kind of surgery. I had the opportunity to meet two trans women who went to the same doctor who was in Thailand, and they spoke highly of this doctor. His technique with the surgery, what he'd done, they raved about it. And I started in doing my research of who I was going to go with. I looked at this doctor in Thailand, and the responses I was hearing from people who'd gone to him was amazing. Very, very, if any, negative comments. All of it was praise for not just him and his technique, but his staff and the people who worked for him. Because if you were going to go to him, he required that you stay in Thailand for 1 month, being that if there's any complications, anything comes up, you're right there. He can take care of the problem before you're on your way back home. The other factor about it all, too, is I'd never in my life traveled outside of the country. And I didn't know if I might ever have any chance of traveling, going to another country. So it was my chance to go somewhere in the world and see other cultures, see other sights, experience different food and music and language and everything. And based on what these two trans girls I talked with who had gone to this doctor, I decided to go to Thailand to have the surgery done. And that was in October of 2003. Or I could go to Thailand. I still had one thing left I had to do, and that was come out at work. That would take a whole hour in and of itself
Okay.
about that because I worked for a highway patrol.
Whoa.
Yeah. And that whole experience, because I was expecting the worst and the opposite occurred for me.
Wow.
Finally got
Right.
to come out. I
Wow.
was amazed by the support I got from work, and they supported me all the way along up the line, all the way up to the commander of Highway Patrol, who made it clear he put out a notice that if anybody harassed me or gave me a bad time, they would be required to turn in their badge and gun. They would no longer work.
That is amazing to hear.
Yeah, that's, and
I
this is.
mean, there's a whole lot more to that story than just that. That's just the extra Reader's Digest condensed version
Sure.
of
Yeah,
what took place there.
that would be a fascinating follow-up interview, because I assume you're still in the same southern state you've been living in all this time, where you live now
Yes.
and everything, where it's not like that now.
I'm
So
no longer with Highway Patrol
we have.
because budget cuts, they eliminated the position I had.
Yeah.
And that was not because of my situation. It was across the board with other
Oh,
people
that yeah.
too.
Oh, that's good. Where did the poetry come into all of this then, Janet?
Okay, yeah, but this was actually much later on. This was not some,
Really?
well, let me back it up a bit here. Go back to my high school year. I had always, especially when I got into high school, had an interest in writing. And I had, from what I was told from my English teachers and that, I was pretty good at it. And it was something I actually seriously considered getting into, but I didn't pursue it because, again, I'm not worthy enough to do that because I can't be the person I'm.
Right.
And
Yeah.
so I talked myself out of it, but I always had that desire to want to write.
Yeah.
Now, when I transitioned 2003, for the first 18 years after transitioning, everything was fine. Everything was normal. I had my job, and I'm just getting on with my life as I did before, only now I was Janet. The writing didn't start until about almost 5 years ago when the mood in the country started to change towards trans people. And you started getting all of this negative stuff being said about us. And particularly in my state, governor wanting to pass laws denying access to health care, especially for kids, and talking about keeping boys out of from playing girl sports and all this kind of stuff. We all understood that he wasn't looking to protect the kids, that this was just the start where it's going to go further than just going after the trans kids and stopping them from being able to transition. And it just started to get too much because, like I said, first 18 years, I'm fine. I'm doing what I want to do. And now all this negativity is coming towards us in the community. And I needed some kind of an outlet because it was getting to me. I mean, I wasn't suffering at all from all the stuff going on. I mean, fortunately, it had been years since I transitioned, so I wasn't having to worry about them saying, well, you're going to have to stop. Too late. It's already happened. But still, the constant hammering at us, the constant lying about us, the making people scared of us, making people fear us. Because, we're going to go after their kids. We're going to, some of the weirdest things, like we're going to take their kids, kidnap them, give them sex changes, and then have sex with them. This is the kind of stuff we're dealing with. Any sane, rational person would go, what? But there are people out there that don't possess the mental capability of thinking logically, I guess, and go, that don't make sense.
And
It
they're very
was,
noisy too, those people.
oh
They're
God,
very
yes.
loud,
Yes.
which I think confuses everybody in terms of how many of them there are. I think that a lot of people, I mean, did I mention Twitter? A microcosm of stuff, which, anyway, sorry, go ahead. But yes, this is about when I was coming out. Was you turned to poetry, I decided to come out of the closet, and we both sort of had the same response, the same impetus, the same stimulus. But you started writing. Go ahead.
It's just I needed some kind of outlet because it, and it still is getting to me, but the writing, I finally went back to that. I always had the desire to want to do this. So I started trying to write poetry as a way to, some of them poetry dealt with just getting emotions out of me because of what was being said about it. But I also started writing poetry too with a positive message that I hoped that all my trans sisters and brothers out there might be able to have a chance to read that would maybe give them some hope, some uplifting spirit to them to not let all this ugly stuff being said about us
Yeah.
get to them the way it was with me. And I didn't start out writing with the idea of writing a poetry book. I was just writing to get it off my chest. And I would occasionally take one of these poems and I'd show them on Twitter and I'd get some nice responses from people in the trans community. And then maybe, let's see, so that was about 2021, I guess, when I started picking up and writing poetry. By 2023, I'm going, I got a fairly good stack of poems here. I almost have enough. If I kept writing, I could almost have enough here that I could put out a book with my poetry. With the idea of doing this, it was going to be my gift to the trans community. Again, to hope that it would help them dealing with everything that was going on, help give them a positive outlook on things, that things will get better somewhere along the way here, and that no matter how rough it is, we're all in this together and we're going to get through it. So poetry and prose from a transgender soul is my gift to the trans community, and I hope I do my best to promote the book everywhere I can. I've promoted it on Twitter, I promoted it on Blue Sky, on Facebook and Threads and Instagram. I'm putting it out there in hopes that people will
And it's
buy the
fine.
book.
I'm a fan. I love the book. I think it does so much of what you set out to do. I'm really looking forward to volume two, the next one, your other projects that you have mentioned. So why don't we totally shift gears here for a second and tell us a little bit about Jan Morris and Conundrum, which you mentioned before, which I read the book when it first came out, and I went, "Oh, you can do that." Oh, but I didn't follow up on it because that inspired the piece I would like for you to read on the show with Gender and Sex with Thanks to Jan Morris. So why don't we do a little reading circle here, introduce the piece, where it came from, everything like that, and then you can read it before we move into the finale.
Yes, the big ending. It's funny because it wasn't until a couple of years ago that I finally was able to get a copy of Conundrum and read it. I know, shocking.
I worked in a library when I was in high school. I got so many books I could get my hands on in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, you were lucky then. See, my
Yeah.
problem is I was so scared and so shoving everything inside of me and not
Nobody,
letting it out that.
I was just sorting books and putting them back on the shelves. Went, "Oh, I'm going to read that one." And nobody knew, and I, but go on. And it's a wonderful book. I loved it.
Oh, I
Hey, you're
did
going to have
too.
to tell us what it's about and who is this person, because not everybody knows. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, now, when I first heard of Jan Morrison, it's like, again, when I saw the article about her when she wrote the book Conundrum in Newsweek, I had not heard of her before, but she was a very famous British journalist. When she was he still, the biggest story that she covered was when, oh God, I'm having a senior
Hillary.
moment. The first guy to
Hillary.
climb Mount Everest,
Hillary.
Sir Edmund Hillary, yes. When he was going to attempt the summit, him and the Sherpa up Everest, they wanted to have a reporter go who would be able to record the event and let the world know when Edmund Hillary made it to the top. Jan Morris was chosen to do that job. So she went with them to Nepal and down to the base at Mount Everest, and was there was he started the ascent up the mountain. And when they would send word back down how far they progressed, what was going on, I guess she was then responsible to word out so that all the other news agencies around the world would be keeping up to date what was going on with this event. And when he finally made it to the top and the word got back down to Jan Morris, when she got it out to the world, it came out on the very day that Queen Elizabeth is becoming the official Queen of England, and here's the word now that Mount Everest had been conquered. It was one of many big news events that he covered while he was working for like two or three different London newspapers during his career. And he wrote all these books about his experiences. And then it was, I think, 1973, if I remember right, he came out with a new book. Only his name wasn't on the cover. It was Jan Morris's name on it. And that was Conundrum. And that's where she came out, how she was, well, again, at that time, they were using the word transsexual, talking about her transitioning, talking about from early childhood, the conflicting feelings she was having, being a boy, but feeling like a girl. And it was interesting, too, because when she was writing about her experience in Nepal, being with all these other guys, as Hillary's attempting to climb Mount Everest, and how out of place she felt among all these guys, because she couldn't relate to them as they talked about guy things, and that's not how she felt. That's not how she identified. And it was just, even though it was years after I transitioned, I read the book, it still had an impact on me, that it kind of helped solidify certain things that I had been feeling, that yes, that was me too. That's what I felt too. It did a lot for me to just understand myself, I think, a little better being trans. And there was a certain point in the book, which is why in the book, I put the title of is Gender and Sex, with underneath it, I got in parentheses with thanks to Jan Morse, because she talked about the whole idea of gender and sex. And that little line, that's all I needed to inspire me to write this poem. So if you're ready, I will go ahead and.
Yeah, by all means.
All right, so the poem is Gender and Sex. Feminine by gender, male by sex. From the moment of birth, it left me perplexed. For so many years, I struggled with life to understand myself and make sense of the strife. It would take decades to find peace within and let desires be expressed and not seen as sin. How could life treat me, left confused and alone, as I suffered in silence in a fate set in stone? The puzzle life gave me, time the pieces fit, and the image it revealed would show me to admit a feminine gender within a male sex. It would be clear what would come next. The choice wasn't easy, but it had to be done. And with the decision, transitioning begun.
Thank you. That
Welcome.
I think the general audience would appreciate just as much as a trans audience will. And it does, as you said, something to pay it forward to younger people, questioning people, everything like that. It just, plus they're going to go running to Wikipedia and say, who is this Jan Morris person anyway? Sort of a thing like
Or if they want to wait till my book comes out, this
exactly. I think we're probably have about enough time to just talk briefly about your experience with the self-publishing and how that obviously it was successful enough for you that you're going to do it again,
yes.
or has led to agents beating on your door and saying, wait, if you want your manuscript, please, please sign here. Sign.
Oh, and
What
I live in that dream that you're living
the
in.
hey, I have several manuscripts, but again, and this is for our audience. This is not for me, but we have a lot of people in our audience who undoubtedly journal, write plays, write short stories, write, poetry, write, they write, and they're all, our age, and they're saying, how can I get this published? Why did you decide on self-publishing, and what are some of the things that you think are great about it, and some of the pitfalls to avoid the second time?
Okay, those are good questions. Of course, when I decided I wanted to get the book published, I thought of going the traditional route with, and it was just impossible trying to get a foot in the door, because I'm a nobody. I've got this first book I've ever written. Nobody knows who I am. And it's the publishing business, I guess, is so darn competitive as it is. You know, they want something that's going to come out the gate on the bestseller lists and everything. They don't want to deal with somebody, especially when it's a book of poetry, because let's face it, poetry is not number one on
Yeah.
people's reading lists. I've often said that I compare poetry to classical music. Only a certain audience that were interested in one either listening to that kind of music or reading this kind of
We
literature.
are very aristocratic.
Yes. We're so highbrow and everything. So it didn't take me long to realize, well, maybe I need to consider self-publishing, because I've known some people that have done it, and they seem to have a good experience with it. So I started looking into going the self-publishing route, and I'd see these ads for different self-publishers, and there were a couple of them. I thought, well, let me contact these people, see what they're like, see what they can do for me. And the moment that I on their site that, I'm interested about publishing a book, people would just start coming at me and giving me, oh yeah, we can get this done right away, we can do this, we're going to make all kinds of money, and blah 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 blah. And that's all they were talking about.
Right.
And it's like, you know what, this is my book, this is kind of like my version of having a baby here,
Yeah.
and I'm not just going to give it to just anybody to publish it. And, there was a couple other publishers same way when I tried to contact them, and oh yeah, we can do this, let's get this done right away, when can you get us to get the manuscript, blah 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 blah.
No.
No. Goodbye. I became very lucky. There was this one site, BookBaby is the company. And I was impressed by their ads and what they said they could do and everything. And so I thought, all right, maybe I'll take the chance again and see what happens. So I contact them, and next thing I know, I'm talking to this very nice young lady, and she goes, all right, so tell me, what's this book about? What did you write? What is it, what do you want to do with it? And all this kind of stuff. And she just had me right then because she's asking me about my book. What's it about? The others, they never asked, well, was it a poetry book? They just, oh, well, let's publish this, let's publish this, let's publish this. No, she wanted to know about my book. She wanted to know what I was writing. And I liked what they had to offer, what they could do for me. But then, of course, there is the one major problem with self-publishing, and that is when you self-publish, you got to put up the money up front to get published. And she really sold me. This was who I wanted to go with. I was really impressed with their operation and how, again, she treated me and wanted to know about me and know about the book before anything else, before we ever got down to talking the business and that. And she quoted the price. Well, I didn't have that kind of money. That was too much. I'm on a fixed income, and even with a cashiering job, I didn't have that kind of money involved.
No, that's consideration.
So she said, well, if you can ever get it together in that, we're here, get in contact with me. So I was very dejected. I figured it's probably not going to happen, because even if I find somebody else, it's probably going to be just as expensive, if not more so. And then two friends of mine, very dear friends, who I always share my poetry with, they had a family member who was transgender, and so they were interested in these poems, and they became fans of my poetry. And I was updating them on things. How did it go? Did when you talked to the publisher there? And I said, well, it went really great. I really liked them. I was really impressed with their operation. But I said, because it's self-publishing, I don't have the money to be able to do it, so I'm going to have to probably find another option. Next thing I know, a couple of days later, I hear back from them. Well, we'll send you the money. We'll loan you the money, and you can pay us back when you can to get the book published.
Patrons.
Patron, yes.
And that's
So I,
awesome. True friends. True friends.
yes. Well, because I said their family, they had a family member who was trans, and I used to send her before she passed away from cancer. I used to send her my poems, and she would read them, and she would comment on them. And there were so many similarities between us with in our lives being trans and what we went through with transitioning. So when she passed on, the rest of her family just became part of my family in a sense. They really are kind of like, and they would read my poems and they would comment on it. And they said, we want to believe in you, and we want to do this. So, all right. And they said, and take your time. You don't have to pay us back right away. There's no time limit when you do it. You pay us back as you go along when you can, and everything will be fine. So they sent me the money, and I called up BookBaby, and I talked with that nice young woman again, and the arrangements were made to get the book published.
Excellent. Wow. That's, and you're becoming a very rich woman, I'm sure, on the royalties from that. But
Oh, excuse
let's
me.
just look, we'll leave that dream out there. We'll just let all our audience know that you're becoming a very, I can see the Rolls parked outside the window behind you, all everything like that. But I think we are wrapping up time-wise.
A pragmatic question, though. If someone is interested, like me, in getting a copy of your book, where would you recommend we look to purchase one?
You can get it from order it through Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Books a Million. You can also even go, and kind of like a little bit better for me, if you go through BookBaby, you can actually go into their site and you can get my book there, because I actually get more royalties when you order from them than when you go through Amazon or Barnes and Noble.
The A word is not a good place for authors, but going to BookBaby is, yeah, that's a great tip and something I will know when I go out and start doing the same schlepping that you have completed. So I
Yeah, thank you for sharing all the
yeah,
dialogue.
no, this has been really
Welcome.
wonderful. I think we should probably go ahead and wrap it up and start off with thank you very much, Janet. This has been a really wonderful, insightful show. I'm sure our audience is going to get an awful lot from your experience. And again, second book, Further Adventures of the Trans, having another show at some time in the future. So I
We'd
would.
be glad to come back anytime you want to have me.
Then I think it's probably time to go on ahead and move on to our closing.
Okay, let's do that. And Janet, I'm going to add my thanks. Your stories were tremendous. If you ever want to do just prose about yourself, everything you just talked about, I think this would make an amazing book too, an autobiographical piece. Just to plant that idea in your head. Okay, so
Okay.
oh, now I'm going to go do the end. You can cut that or not if you want. But that would be an awesome book. So thank you. Thank you deeply.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to come on here and talk about.
It was wonderful. So for the ending part, thanks again to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carbaryl at 103.5 FM and to the Orange County, North Carolina Department on Aging for making Out on the Edge a reality. We also want to thank you, our listeners, for joining us today. If you have questions or ideas for future shows, email us at outontheedgeradio@gmail.com. Now I'm going to bop this back to Janet. And Janet, we'd like you to close the show today with a really inspiring poem that we've all read at this point. So please, let's share it with our audience.
Okay, I'll be more than happy to. The name of this short little poem is Be You. Be happy and embrace who you are. Choose how you want to appear and become that vision you see. Live your life, for it is your only life to live.
Thank you. That's really beautiful. And it's a tremendous inspirational ending for us because it pushes us forward as inspirations do.
Thank you very much, Janet. And we look forward to the next time we see you here and have a chat. And we'd like to let everyone know, please join us again next week, Monday, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern, for Out on the Edge. Till then, live your love out loud.